This starting business is terrible work. We have to shake the sledge and its big load while we shout to the dogs to start. If they do not pull together, it is useless. When we get the sledge going, we are on tenterhooks lest it stop again on the next soft slope, and this often occurs. Sledging is real hard work, but we are getting along. The surface was better on February 2nd, and the party covered 6 miles without relaying. They camped in soft snow, and when they started the next day, they were 2 hours relaying over 150 yards. Then they got into Joyce's track and found the going better. McIntosh overtook Joyce on the morning of February 4th and went ahead, his party breaking trail during the next march. They covered 10 miles on the night of the 4th. One dog had chucked his hand in on the march, and McIntosh mentions that he intended to increase the dog's allowance of food. The surface was harder, and during the night of February 5th, McIntosh covered 11 miles 25 yards, but he finished with 2 dogs on the sledge. Joyce was travelling by day so that the parties passed one another daily on the march. A blizzard came from the south on February 10th, and the parties were confined to their tents for over 24 hours. The weather moderated on the morning of the next day, and at 11 a.m. McIntosh camped beside Joyce and proceeded to rearrange the parties. One of his dogs had died on the 9th, and several others had ceased to be worth much for pulling. He had decided to take the best dogs from the 2 teams and continue the march with Joyce and Wild, while Smith, Jack and Gaze went back to Hut Point with the remaining dogs. This involved the adjustment of sledge loads in order that the proper supplies might be available for the depots. He had 8 dogs and Smith had 5. A depot of oil and fuel was laid at this point and marked by a cairn with a bamboo pole rising 10 feet above it. The change made for better progress. Smith turned back at once, and the other party went ahead fairly rapidly, the dogs being able to haul the sledge without much assistance from the men. The party built a cairn of snow after each hour's travelling to serve as guides to the depot and as marks for the return journey. Another blizzard held the men up on February 13th, and they had an uncomfortable time in their sleeping bags owing to low temperature. During succeeding days, the party plodded forward. They were able to cover from 5 to 12 miles a day, according to the surface and weather. They built the cairns regularly and checked their route by taking bearings of the mountains to the west. They were able to cover from 5 to 12 miles a day, the dogs pulling fairly well. They reached latitude 80 degrees south on the afternoon of February 20th. McIntosh had hoped to find a depot laid in that neighbourhood by Captain Scott, but no trace of it was seen. The surface had been very rough during the afternoon, and for that reason the depot to be laid there was named Rocky Mountain Depot. The stores were to be placed on a substantial cairn, and smaller cairns were to be built at right angles to the depot as a guide to the overland party. As soon as breakfast was over, wrote McIntosh the next day, Joyce and Wild went off with a light sledge and the dogs to lay out the cairns and place flags to the eastward, building them at every mile. The outer cairn had a large flag and a note indicating the position of the depot. I remained behind to get angles and fix our position with the theodolite. The temperature was very low this morning, and handling the theodolite was not too warm a job for the fingers. My whiskers froze to the metal while I was taking a sight. After 5 hours, the others arrived back. They had covered 10 miles, 5 miles out and 5 miles back. During the afternoon, we finished the cairn, which we have built to a height of 8 feet. It is a solid, square erection, which ought to stand a good deal of weathering, and on top we have placed a bamboo pole with a flag, making the total height 25 feet. Building the cairn was a fine, warming job, but the ice on our whiskers often took some 10 minutes thawing out. Tomorrow we hope to lay out the cairns to the westward, and then to shape our course for the bluff. The weather became bad again during the night. A blizzard kept the men in their sleeping bags on February 21st, and it was not until the afternoon of the 23rd that McIntosh and Joyce made an attempt to lay out the cairns to the west. They found that 2 of the dogs had died during the storm, leaving 7 dogs to haul the sledge. They marched 1.5 miles to the westward and built a cairn, but the weather was very thick and they did not think it wise to proceed further. They could not see more than 100 yards and the tent was soon out of sight. They returned to the camp and stayed there until the morning of February 24th, when they started the return march with snow still falling. We did get off from our camp, says McIntosh, but had only proceeded about 400 yards when the fog came on so thick that we could scarcely see a yard ahead. So we had to pitch the tent again, and are now sitting inside, hoping the weather will clear. We are going back with only 10 days' provisions, so it means pushing on for all we are worth. These stoppages are truly annoying. The poor dogs are feeling hungry. They eat their harness or any straps that may be about. We can give them nothing beyond their allowance of 3 biscuits each, as we are on bare rations ourselves. But I feel sure they require more than 1 pound a day. That is what they are getting now. After lunch we found it a little clearer, but a very bad light. We decided to push on. It is weird travelling in this light. There is no contrast or outline. The sky and the surface are one, and we cannot discern undulations, which we encounter with disastrous results. We picked up the first of our outward cairns. This was most fortunate. After passing a second cairn, everything became blotted out, and so we were forced to camp, after covering 4 miles, 703 yards. The dogs are feeling the pangs of hunger and devouring everything they see. They will eat anything except rope. If we had not wasted those 3 days, we might have been able to give them a good feed at the Bluff Depot. But now that is impossible. It is snowing hard. The experiences of the next few days were unhappy. Another blizzard brought heavy snow and held the party up throughout the 25th and 26th. Outside is a scene of chaos. The snow whirling along with the wind obliterates everything. The dogs are completely buried, and only a mound with a ski sticking up indicates where the sledge is. We long to be off, but the howl of the wind shows how impossible it is. The sleeping bags are damp and sticky, so are our clothes. Fortunately, the temperature is fairly high and they do not freeze. One of the dogs gave a bark and Joyce went out to investigate. He found that Major, feeling hungry, had dragged his way to Joyce's ski and eaten off the leather binding. Another dog has eaten all his harness, canvas, rope, leather, brass, and rivets. I am afraid the dogs will not pull through. They all look thin, and these blizzards do not improve matters. We have a week's provisions and 160 miles to travel. It appears that we will have to get another week's provisions from the depot, but don't wish it. We'll see what luck tomorrow. Of course, at Bluff, we can replenish. We are now reduced to one meal in the 24 hours, wrote McIntosh a day later. This going without food keeps us colder. It is a rotten, miserable time. It is bad enough having this wait, but we have also the wretched thought of having to use the provisions already depoted, for which we have had all this hard struggle. The weather cleared on the 27th, and in the afternoon McIntosh and Joyce went back to the depot, while Wilde remained behind to build a cairn and attempt to dry the sleeping bags in the sun. The stores left at the depot had been 2¼ tins of biscuit, 42 pounds to the tin, rations for 3 men for 3 weeks in bags, each intended to last 1 week, and 3 tins of oil. McIntosh took one of the weekly bags from the depot and returned to the camp. The party resumed the homeward journey the next morning, and with a sail on the sledge to take advantage of the southerly breeze, covered 9.5 miles during the day. But the dogs had reached almost the limit of their endurance. 3 of them fell out, unable to work longer, while on the march. That evening, for the first time since leaving the Aurora, the men saw the sun dip to the horizon in the south, a reminder that the Antarctic summer was nearing its close. The remaining 4 dogs collapsed on March 2nd. After lunch we went off fairly well for 30 minutes, then Nigger commenced to wobble about, his legs eventually giving under him. We took him out of his harness and let him travel along with us, but he has given us all he can, and now can only lie down. After Nigger, my friend Pompey collapsed. The drift, I think, accounts a good deal for this. Pompey has been splendid of late, pulling steadily and well. Then Scotty, the last dog but one, gave up. They are all lying down in our tracks. They have a painless death, for they curl up in the snow and fall into a sleep from which they will never wake. We are left with 1 dog, Pinky. He has not been one of the pullers, but he is not despised. We can afford to give him plenty of biscuit. We must nurse him and see if we cannot return with 1 dog at least. We are now pulling ourselves, with the sail, the floorcloth of the tent, set, and Pinky giving a hand. At one stage a terrific gust came along and capsized the sledge. The sail was blown off the sledge out of its guise, and we prepared to camp. But the wind fell again to a moderate breeze, so we repaired the sledge and proceeded.